God.
Did I just
like yell? Why are you not wearing headphones?
Good question.
Oh man, you are in rare form this morning. Let me just say.
One moment, please. Why don't you introduce this show?
Why don't I do that? Well, you do the thing you were supposed to have done 10 minutes ago. This is Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema.
Yes.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi, film critic for TheWrap.com and What the Flick, and with me is Bozo the Clown, a.k.a. Dave White, film critic for Movies.com.
I have a particular set of skills.
None of which involve podcasting, apparently. All right. I mean, we've only been doing the show for 3.5 years. I don't know why I would expect you to pick it up the niceties by now. You know, we got it together now?
In my defense. I've been having a very, very stressful morning.
Trying to figure out where to have lunch.
I'm going to the opera right after we finish this.
Yes.
And I have to find a suitable lunch location for me and Chris Gardner, our dear friend.
Yes.
With whom I will be seeing Billy Budd.
And because it's raining, everything is kerfuffle.
Yeah.
Because Los Angeles is made entirely of spun sugar.
That was a problem, like having to figure all that out. Like, the amazing amount of stress that went into that. And then this new cassette player. You know, I'm just not. We haven't bonded yet. I don't know.
The buttons say what they do. There's a little symbol on the top of the buttons that say what.
Our old tape player had buttons in a different place.
Oh no! So this is going to take you a year to reprogram yourself.
Change is very difficult for me. I don't like it.
Why am I getting such low levels? Oh god damn it!
What?
Hang on.
We're back after you fixed the audio that you didn't do properly before we began. So, where's your God now?
Good thing I'm an atheist.
Yeah. Well, who's the big dummy here at the moment? I don't want to name names, but his initials are Alonzo Duraldi.
Oh, you got lucky this one time.
Yeah. Anyway, it's been a very hectic morning.
Yes, clearly for both of us.
And I
welcome to professional podcasting.
We're gonna get this knocked out real fast.
Yes,
so that I can put on my fancy opera going outfits,
your spats and your gloves,
indeed, and then drive down to Dorothy Chandler, Tony, where. I will eat a delicious sandwich
right. And
see Billy Budd, yes. B-U-D-D, not Billy Butt.
Is that the porn version?
That's the porn version of Billy Budd.
Is Billy Budd, is that Benjamin Britten?
It is.
It's a lot of bees.
Benjamin Britten, Billy Budd. Those are four bees. It's pretty fascinating, this conversation.
Yes, I know. I was trying to think of like an actor or actress who also had BB and starring Brigitte Bardot
and Benjamin Bratt.
Bingo.
Yeah. Bingo. That's another letter. That's another word that begins with B.
Thank you, Big Bird. Oh boy. Okay. So we're a little loopy because we were up late last night taping our Clue commentary, which is now
sell that thing
available for sale, which is to say that it is available for purchase and you need to be purchasing it. We do a feature length and then some commentary to go with the movie Clue, the 1985 comedy, and It's pretty great. I think you will enjoy it. And it's a mere $1.99. All you have to do is PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Send us your email address, and we will get it to you. You can listen to it the way you listen to this show, like in your car or at the gym or whatever. Or you can sit down and watch it with the movie. It works either way. And, you know, we're not being cinematic Titanic-y about it. Or it's not just us cracking jokes. We actually have...
There are virtually no jokes.
We have insights and discussions and actual film...
Reveries.
Actual film criticizing going on. Also exciting this week...
We have a sponsor.
We have a sponsor!
Now, I'm sure he's probably listening.
I would think he would be.
So, I just want to make a disclaimer about the sponsorship thing that we're about to do right now.
Oh, boy.
This is a freebie. Mr. Martin, this is a freebie. This doesn't count because I am responsible for getting...
Oh, God, Dave White. You didn't do it, did you?
Can you just calm down for just a second? Oh, God. Look, it's going to work out better for him in the long run. We got your copy. I was hand-delivered your email this morning. And thanks to my really stressful lunch negotiations, I haven't had a chance to work through your copy yet for this sponsorship. So know that the amount of sponsorship that you generously paid us for...
Does not include this one.
Does not include this one because I'm about to screw it all up. No, we have a sponsor. It's so fantastic. We have our very first sponsor.
It only took us 3+ years.
That's right. And now... And now we have one, and for many episodes into the future, we're going to tell you all about our sponsor's product.
Yes.
Starting today, although the amount that he paid for versus the number that we agreed to do for that money does not include today's. Today's is a freebie because I'm just ad-libbing it all, and so are you.
Great.
Our linoleum knife is brought to you by The Real Truth. Everything you didn't need to know. Oh, sorry. Everything you didn't know.
Again, this is a free one. Sorry. We're not counting.
Linoleum Knife is brought to you by The Real Truth. Everything you didn't know, you need to know about making an independent film. By Reed Martin from Faber & Faber Publishers. We're so high class at Linoleum Knife that we are sponsored by a book.
That's right.
A book you got to read. And it isn't a little book either. This book has 536 pages. This book has so many pages of information that you didn't know you need to know. Do you want to make an independent film that isn't garbage? Here's how you learn. You don't learn from just picking up a camera and being... Tommy Wiseau about it.
Or two cameras in his
case. You might make a lot of money in the long run by doing that sort of thing.
But the odds are against you.
But the odds are against you, indeed. Here are the things that you will learn about while you read this book. The top 10 deal breakers. First timer mistakes. I'm bad at reading. First timer mistakes. Big talkers. Screenplay thieves, nightmare investors, scam artists, do-nothing line producers, bad actors. How to avoid all those terrible things.
We will put a link on how to order this book from Amazon on our Facebook page, but it is available wherever fine books are sold.
Also, where terrible books are sold.
Yes, well.
Because you just walk into Barnes & Noble.
That's true. They got a lot of terrible books.
They got a lot of garbage.
But they have a few fine books, including The Real Truth by Reed Martin.
Yeah. And there's a blurb on the cover by Anthony Bregman, producer of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
What does he say?
He calls it a brilliant how-to manual for tackling and mastering the industry. I got to read this.
Well, all right.
I want to master something.
You got to read something.
I've been reading a lot of things. I've been reading... The Barbara Ehrenreich book?
No, I know.
I've been reading Billy Budd.
Yes.
I've been reading Morrissey's autobiography. a lot of things.
You've been garbling the words on the cover of this book?
Look, this was my first experience of reading today, other than navigating the reservation site of the restaurant I'll be having lunch at. So I really don't need your hassle. Not from you, not from Reed Martin, not from Faber and Faber. If you're from Faber and Faber and you're listening to this, you just sit back, because the sponsorship moments are going to get so much better and more high class and professional.
But in the meantime, we want to thank Reed Martin for
Reed Martin. For his... I am sorry. That's what I'm trying to say. All the copy that you wrote is going to be way better than what I just did. And this was your freebie.
Yeah.
This was
a gimme.
This was your gimme. That's right. But yeah, do you care about making a movie? You have to read this book, or you're going to fail.
And that's a guarantee.
That's a guarantee. A guarantee you are going to screw it all up. This book is only $25.
Right.
Probably cheaper than that on Amazon.
Probably. So, that's okay. That's our spot.
The end.
We'll be back next week.
End of cinema.
There we go. Thank you, Jean-Luc. We'll be back next week with a legitimate ad. Speaking of Godard, we just lost Alain Resnais.
Yep.
Another
Godard killed him.
Probably.
That's why we're speaking of Godard.
Another giant of the French New Wave.
In Resnais' sleep, Godard came in and killed him.
Best known.
He was actually quite old.
Yes, he was 91.
He's still making movies.
Yes, his latest film just premiered at Berlin. Yep. He is probably best known for Last Year at Marienbad and Night and Fog.
Hiroshima Mon Amour.
His film Je T'aime is actually about to screen for a week-long engagement at the Cine Family here in Los Angeles in a new 35mm print. So if you are here in town and you want to pay tribute to Monsieur Resnais, that would be a great opportunity to do so. By the way, if you are in Los Angeles, there's a new website called KansasAnymore.com, and it basically is a fairly comprehensive listing of all the repertory film opportunities in town, and there are many, and they do their best to sort of create a comprehensive calendar that includes the museums and, you know, the New Beverly and Cinefamily and American Cinematheque, all the places where you can see cool old movies. It's one-stop shopping.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I could go to that website instead of going to all the websites?
You could do that.
Wow.
Yes.
Are they our sponsor yet?
No.
Then why are we advertising them? We're doing a PSA.
As a mitzvah. As a mitzvah to our listeners.
I know what Shonda means. That's what you
You're
are.
You're a Shonda.
I'm a Shonda when it comes to reading things for the first time in the morning. Because it is the morning.
It is.
It is Sunday morning.
Yes.
Coming down, and we are not ready for anything.
Dave's going to the opera. I am. If you happen to catch this show fresh out of the oven, I will be spending the afternoon at the Young Turks studio, where we will all be watching the Oscars. And you can watch us watch the Oscars on YouTube.
I can't wait to do that.
Through the whole thing. they apparently did it during the Super Bowl, and it was really popular. So
it's going
to
be great.
They've gotten us to all come
for
in
for everyone else who
and watch the Academy Awards. So I'll be watching the Academy Awards on YouTube. Not that I'm watching
now,
them on YouTube.
Can I communicate with you guys while you're doing this? Do you take calls from listeners or watchers?
Okay, it's a YouTube page, so I imagine you could comment on it?
But I don't ever comment on YouTube.
Well, then you could text me.
I just want to make comments about how cute you look.
Oh, that's
on sweet. The thing, because you're going to look real cute. Like, you should watch this, because Lonzo's going to look real cute.
Oh, shut up.
Yeah. Get that lumberjacky shirt in your fuzzy gray wool blazer. And
this rain is playing havoc with my beard, let me just tell you.
No, it's making the beard big and full. It's making everything look great.
So there's that. All right, let's get through this. It's a relatively light week, actually. Only a couple of big releases and then a couple of smaller ones.
The Wind Rises has finally begun playing in the world.
Yes.
It opened in New York and Los Angeles in December for 1 week in its Japanese version.
Right.
Last week, it opened in very limited release in its English
language
version, And this week it expands, and next week it expands some more.
Yeah.
So it may, if you live in a reasonably half-assed sized place, it might come to you.
And I think actually in some larger cities...
I know it's in Austin this weekend, because I was just talking to PW this morning, and uh-huh. He and Randall are going today.
Oh, nice.
Y'all don't know who that is.
No.
Who they? You don't know who they is. You don't know who they are. But they're great, and they're going to see this film today.
Everyone's thrilled. Some cities, I believe, actually will still offer you the option of still being able to see it in the original Japanese.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
you know, with a cartoon, I don't sweat it so much because, frankly, it's all dubbed.
I understand that. Yeah.
And when it comes to it, this is the latest and allegedly final film from master animator Hayao Miyazaki.
It's not.
I
talked to him the other day.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're tight. The thing about his films, you know, usually when they would open in Los Angeles and you had the option of seeing it both ways, I like seeing it in English first.
Right.
Because then that way you get the pure, unfettered image. Yes. And then I would go back and see it in Japanese where there were the subtitles and, you know, they were covering up part of the screen. But either way, we have not seen the English language version of Wind Rises, but we did see it in the original Japanese, and it's a gorgeous movie.
It's beautiful.
And it's very different from his stuff in that it is...
Non-fantastical.
Exactly. Right. You know, there apart from some dream sequences, it's a biopic, actually. Yeah. It's about...
It's a historical drama.
Yeah, it's about an aeronautical designer who revolutionized flight. Sadly, his innovations were used to create the Zero planes that the Japanese used to bomb Pearl Harbor.
Right.
But, you know, I think that's an eternal conflict between people who...
Create things.
Who are pure engineers and inventors, and then the, you know, what's the military usage.
Right.
Real Genius actually addresses this issue as well, a movie that Dave White still hasn't seen. But it's gorgeous and lyrical and all the things that you want a Miyazaki film to be. I kind of want to see the English dub because the German airplane guy is voiced by
Werner Herzog. Yeah. It's a slow movie.
Yes.
And that...
It's not a kid's movie. I wouldn't take anybody under 10 to see it.
When I say it is a slow movie, that is not a criticism.
No.
Slow movies are very valuable, and we don't get enough of them.
Yeah.
Because people don't have patience for them.
Right.
So you need patience for this. And
it's Japanese in the old sense.
Yes. And so, but it's lovely, and, you know... Go fresh. Go ready for...
be awake.
Go ready for something quiet and
contemplative.
Gentle and slow, yeah.
And I think it's the first film I've ever seen that really treats engineering like art. You know,
true.
You know, we might occasionally get a movie about an inventor or something where they, you know, about their inspirations. But this is here's a guy who gets excited about flush riveting because of the aerodynamic, you know, nature of it. And yeah. It's like, yeah, you know, we see all these movies about artists and how they're driven and how they, you know, create and people don't understand and they fail and then they succeed. But, you know, when you think of all the engineers and architects out there who make things that we use or consume or live in that don't really get their due as artists. I think this movie does a great job of conveying that.
Right.
And you know, it has been politically controversial. People think the idea of making a film celebrating a guy who created this horrible, you know, instrument of war is in bad taste or whatever. And, you know, the guy is not sitting at his table going, aha, I'm going to destroy the Americans with my brilliant airplane design.
No one
That's
does that,
not yeah. his thing. That he is just literally somebody who's always loved flight and wants to sort of improve it. And Miyazaki, obviously, if you know his films, also obsessed with flight. If you look at a movie like, you know, Laputa, Castle in the Sky, or Kiki's Delivery Service, or especially Porco Rosso, I mean, these are movies about the exhilaration of flight. And so in a way, even if this does wind up being his last film, because he's threatened to retire before. He said he was going to retire after Princess Mononoke. He said he was going to retire after Spirited Away. If this winds up being...
I'm retiring after this episode.
No, that's great. What, am I supposed to talk you out of it now? Because that's not happening.
How will you woo me back to podcasting after this?
We have a sponsor now. Well, someone's paying us. We can't leave.
There's money in the balance now, I guess.
Yes.
All right.
Fine. Anyway, if this does wind up being Miyazaki's last film, it will be sort of a fitting capper for his career, I think, because it touches on so many of the things that he has always been interested in.
Prototype flanges.
Yes.
made from the luxurious material of extruded aluminum alloy. That's aluminium for you British people.
You know, there's a great thing where he's working at this company where they have this giant factory where they're building these planes, but then to haul the planes outside to the field for them to be tested, like, they have to basically hook them up to a team of oxen.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous movie. You should totally see it.
Okay, so Son of God,
which I did not see,
is about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
He nice the Jesus. It's terrible. I saw it. You did not.
That's great.
Here's why it's terrible. It was part of that 10-part miniseries called The Bible that came out was on TV last year.
10-part or 10-hour?
10-hour, 10-part, whatever. There were 10 of something with The Bible. Mark Burnett and Roman Downey, who call themselves, and I'm not making this up, this is a quote from Roman Downey, the noisiest Christians in Hollywood.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Do that line from Touched by an Angel that you impersonate her.
God loves you. God cares for you. God loves you.
I wish I had a Della Reese impersonation in my pocket so we could sort of, you know, go from there, but I don't.
Every time I'd watch Touched by an Angel, and sometimes I did.
Wow.
Roman Downey as Angel would say those very things. So anyway, it's their movie. Roma plays Mary, Jesus' mom. Not as a young person.
I was going to say.
Although I wish she had tried. It would have been terrific. But I'm only 15.
And I'm without sin.
And so, they took the Jesus parts from this Bible miniseries. They chopped them down. They edited out Obama Devil.
Right.
And they put it in a movie theater. And there's a little new footage. I don't know what. But there's a little bit of new footage.
Yeah.
But not much. It's largely what was on television already.
If you're a devout Christian, how do you not feel scammed by this?
It's about representation.
They're always selling, right?
There aren't enough Christian films that make it into theaters. You know, there's a big DVD market for Christian films that go straight to DVD. But a lot don't make it into theaters. And so the feeling is, you know, we go. It doesn't matter who's suckering us, we go. And this is you're being played, honestly, if you pay for a ticket to see this, for a thing that's already been on television. But it doesn't matter, because what it is a vote of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Or, look, we will pay for Christian movies. We will go buy tickets to Christian movies. And, you know, that was shown when Kirk Cameron made that fire movie, when he played a firefighter. I forget the name of it. Fireproof, I think, is the name of it.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
That movie about the cops called Courageous that I saw, I reviewed, also terrible. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm in love with a church girl. Even See Me Dance was a theatrical release.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so those movies exist in theaters.
Megiddo.
And so, Megiddo, the Omega Code 2, which was Megiddo. You know, those movies exist, and the audiences, they go right out to see them, no matter how much of a ripoff it is, like this one, or no matter how bad it is, like literally every single other one. Unfortunately, the world of Christian-themed films is such a difficult topic to translate into a quality movie, I think, because if you are message first, execution second, you're going to make a mediocre film.
Sure.
And that's what this has happened here. I mean, this is, even if this had been a directly theatrical film and not chopped up from a TV movie, it would still look just like this. It would look like the TV movie that it is. It would have the quality of acting that it has, TV movie quality acting, which is generally not very good. This is a straight up dry by the book story of the gospel. or rather John's story of the gospel, because there are four different versions right. in the Bible. And so, you know, what you get is a greatest story ever told sort of situation with nothing interesting about it at all. Jesus is a white dude. He's a European again. And I can't imagine a thoughtful Christian person wanting to look at this and feeling good about it. Because it doesn't matter that it's the story of Jesus. It just doesn't matter in terms of artistic quality. Mm. What your movie is about does not automatically make it good. What your movie is about is simply what it's about. You also have to execute a good film out of that subject matter.
Yeah.
And again, they have not.
You know, this is the thing that comes up every time there's a new Atlas Shrugged movie.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, look, I can put aside my feelings about Ayn Rand. I mean, I've read that book twice.
Yeah.
It's a stupid book in terms of its politics and its philosophy, but it's a page-turner. Uh-huh. You know, and
I know it's a page-turner because that's how you describe it every time we talk about it.
But I mean, it's that kind of, you know, it's she knows how to write
entertainment. I'm just trying to tell you to unpack different adjectives from now on to keep me amused and entertained. Fine. I don't, you know, I'm not one of your fans, man.
Clearly not. Funny how you can suddenly form sentences when you need to insult me. Anyway. But, you know, every time I give a bad review to an Atlas Shrugged movie, I, you know, the usual, like, libertarian Tea Party types pile on in the comments.
Right. Yeah,
and it's like, you know what? Where were you when I gave a bad review to Dirty Wars?
Right.
Or Milk?
Right.
Or, you know, movies whose political agenda I was completely on board with, yes. but that were badly made films.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a couple things going on here. First of all, you know, your devout Christians are going to defend it no matter what, and if uh-huh. you don't like it, well, then you just hate the Lord.
Right.
The other thing is,
apparently that's what's happening on the comments page at movies.com.
Apparently so, yeah.
I haven't been there.
No, of course not.
But people who don't know me at all have decided that they do know the contents of my soul.
There you go.
I am told that I am called names, and I am also told that I don't understand the film because I don't have Jesus in my heart.
Ah.
That's what I am told by people who've never met me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Aren't they lovely? full of God's love. The other thing, though, is that contemporary Christianity, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, because you know this stuff better than I do.
Oh, I know this subject backwards and forwards.
I know you do. Contemporary Christianity is so far afield from the actual message of Christ.
That's correct.
In terms of his crazy liberalism.
That is also correct.
That if you want to make a movie about him that jibes with the beliefs of its target audience, you have to take out all the good stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't get to make Pasolini's The Gospel According to St. Matthew,
nope.
where Jesus is basically a bomb-throwing anarchist.
Right.
You know, you have to, like, make him into this very sort of placid, nice guy saying nice things and being beatific all the time.
Someone's knocking on our door.
We'll be right back. So you're left with a Jesus who's not a very compelling character. And I guess the only way to make him interesting now is to make a movie that's going to annoy that audience for example, you know, Last Temptation.
Yes.
Where Christ is actually portrayed as a conflicted human being
yeah.
who isn't entirely sure, you know, that he's doing the right thing or whatever.
You cannot have a non-victorious Jesus.
Right.
And by non-victorious, I mean a conflicted person, a doubting person, a troubled person. Obviously, in the eyes of people who are not Christians, the crucifixion means that he is a non-victorious Jesus. But in the Christian belief system, that is not the end of anything.
Right.
That is simply the struggle that has to be, you know, dealt with in order for the resurrection to happen.
Now, so, Burnett and Downey, who are very smart cookies and connected,
yes,
somehow
are.
Managed to get the Anti-Defamation League to sign off on this one.
Mm-hmm.
But I hear that it's problematic with the whole Jews killed our Savior thing.
Yep. All the Jewish leader guys are played by men who look very Middle Eastern.
As opposed to Portuguese Jews.
They look a little more Semitic.
As opposed to Portuguese.
Then, oh, say, Portuguese Jesus, Euro-Christ in this film. Yeah, there's no getting around that this movie is basically doing the same old thing of being like, look at these Jews. Look at these Jews killing Jesus. And it's just, I mean...
They all look like Watto from episode one.
Yeah, it's so dumb. So, it's 2.5 hours long. It is dry as a stick. And it's not a good film. If you respond to it emotionally, it's because you already have an emotional investment in this story. Honestly. The movie does no work for you at all. None. Zero work.
So, okay, here's the other thing, though. You talk about how the hardcore Christian audience wants representation. Do they not care about proselytizing? Because it seems like this movie is...
They do, but they expect you to come to them.
I see.
I'm not kidding.
No, I believe
they expect you to come to them. They expect you to look. They look, we made you this garbage cake. If you eat it, you're totally going to get saved. Here it is. We made you a garbage cake. Yum.
Tell us how much
isn't it delicious? Doesn't it taste just like that nice cake that you already had the other day? Yes, it does. No, it totally does. It's the same tasting cake. Seriously. My whole life with those folks.
Yes.
That's the operative. That's the modus operandi. That's how it works. Let's get them in. Give them some jive. And if they don't respond, obviously, Satan has control of their soul.
if they don't like this crappy Christian band that sounds vaguely like Wilson Phillips, then that's
there's something wrong lost. With them.
No, yeah, exactly. brother.
So I used to get in so much trouble to the point where I stopped talking about it back when I was actively involved in the church way back in the day in the 80s. And I would just... I went through a period of time in my young years where that Christian music was like, that was what I was going to, I was going to force myself to be into that stuff. And I did. I forced myself to be into that stuff. And I just told myself over and over, I like this. Like, it was just, you do that. Like, you convince yourself of all that stuff. And then I realized that no, it was not. No, it was bad. It was all quite bad. And that there were like fewer than a handful of Christian artists that were worth a dang, you know. And because of those fewer than a handful who stuck out like sore thumbs, I realized that everything else truly was terrible. Like there's no setting it apart. When you've got someone in that world being an upstart.
Right.
And making something genuinely good that anyone could like, it just throws everything else into like this ugly light. So, you know, oops, I'm sorry, Sam Phillips exists. You know, and a couple other people, you know, Larry Norman, like that. Too bad they're showing up everyone else. You know, and that's why when a good film about Christianity comes along, it bothers people. The Apostle. It's what I talked about, the Apostle, in my review, Son of God. You know, this is a devout movie about a real preacher with real problems. And it was a hit, too. I mean, Christian audiences in the 90s went to see the Apostle. Somehow they have forgotten that this film existed.
Well,
I'm not even talking about the art house. I'm not talking about Pasolini. I'm not talking about Baltasar. I'm not talking about, you know, any of those serious hardcore art films that have dealt with Christian themes in a provocative, you know, artistically meaningful, resonant, lasting way.
Right, but it's only every once in a while that Robert Duvall wants to make that movie. The rest of the time,
1997.
Right, the rest of the time, it's just Roma Downey.
I know, exactly. So you and Robert Duvall's about to gonna die soon. Like, he's an old dude, and I bet he's not gonna make another movie like that.
Probably not. I think actually, didn't he retire and he's like writing books now?
Or I don't know. What
is that Gene Hackman? I can't.
I'm not sure. But the you know, why has there not been a good American mainstream Christian themed film since 1997? I think that's a question that these folks need to ask themselves. Why are we making garbage cakes?
Well, what about Black Nativity?
Black Nativity is real sweet, and I like it.
You liked it more than I did.
But it is a problematic film.
Yes, it is. Sure is.
It is. It is
a very kind way to put it.
It is problematic, but it's. I dug it, and it doesn't bang you over the head with anything either.
True,
really. So
well, you know, again, like even lefty films that are all about their agenda aren't interesting. Terrible. And so, yeah, I think the thing is that the people who make Jesus movies make Jesus movies, right, and that's right. Just, you know,
what's that one that I just couldn't stand from about 10 years ago? Cradle Will Rock.
Yeah, that's one of the ones I always think of that I get.
Is that what you have? Okay.
Yeah, Tim Robbins, terrible.
I agree with the politics of that film all the way, from A to Z. Boy, do I hate that movie.
I think when I reviewed it at the time, I said it's the kind of movie that conservatives point to when they want to give liberals a bad name.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Let them. They deserve to be pointed out when they make stuff like that.
So then also this week I think only in L.A., and it's going to be branching out later, The Wind Rises, a nominee for Best Animated Film this year, Ernest and Celestine.
Ernest saves Celestine.
Yes. No. Different Ernest.
Ernest goes to Celestine.
No. Ernest, Celestine, stupid. No. Wrong Ernest. A lovely, lovely French film, which I have seen both the French and English dubs.
And I have seen neither version yet. So far.
And it's based on a storybook. It's about... Celestine is a mouse, and the mice all live in the sewers and are terrified, terrified, terrified of the big, mean, hungry bears. And yet at the same time, they rely upon their incisors to stay alive, and the dentists need young bear teeth to put into the mouth of mice. So the little mice are sent out to capture said teeth. I guess in France, the tooth fairy is a mouse. So they sort of extrapolate onto that and turn into this
bell,
whole thing.
The flying bell brings you the candy at Easter,
right.
And the tooth fairy is a mouse.
Correct.
All right.
And I'm not sure what their Père Noël is, but that's a whole other subject. Anyway, so Celestine winds up becoming friends with Ernest, who is a big hungry bear and a street musician, and... their friendship is taboo in both of their worlds. But it's, I don't know, it's hard to even describe this movie. It's so sweet and so funny and charming and lovely. And it's, you know, I think it might have some CG elements, but it looks like it's all done in watercolors. Celestine, Ernest originally wants to eat her, and Celestine saves herself by helping him break into a candy store where he basically devours everything. And the candy store is run by this other bear whose wife has a shop across the street that sells replacement teeth. And he forbids their son to eat any candy because their whole business model is based upon people eating his candy, having their teeth rot out, and having to go get new one from the wife across the street. Anyway, you don't have to have a kid to see this movie or like this movie. Just go see it anyway when it comes to where you are. It's so beautiful. LA Film Critics gave it Best Animated Film last year over The Wind Rises, over Frozen, over all the other movies from last year. And it's dynamite.
You're dynamite.
No. Shut up.
I'm sorry. I meant to say that you are dynamite.
Oh, there we go. Thank you.
Okay. So I believe I discussed at the beginning of this show that I have a very particular set of skills.
You do, and did, yes.
Organizing. nagging you to take out the trash.
Mm-hmm.
Backseat driving.
Yes.
Snoring.
Yes.
Kylie Minogue karaoke.
Right.
Sexy dancing.
Sure.
Buttering things.
Yes.
Eavesdropping.
Making Gwyneth Paltrow recipes.
Making recipes from Gwyneth Paltrow's cookbook. Grammar policing people on the internet.
Mm.
Filing noise complaints against our neighbors. Spilling things on myself. Tripping over stuff. Falling flat on my back into wet puddles. Which I did 48 hours ago. Smiling badly in photographs and ruining them. And failing at many, many, many other things in life.
Somehow this has not made anyone want to make an action movie about you.
I think they should, though. I think that I would be the next action star if you could incorporate all of those, my skills.
Yes. Your specific set of skills.
And my particular set of skills into a film. I think I could really set the box office on fire.
I think so. But the person who is setting the box office on fire with his specific set of skills is, of course, Liam Neeson, because it's February. And the early part of the year, the one respite that film critics and the rest of the world get at the movies in this bleak, bleak period of the calendar is that Liam Neeson will invariably show up and punch a lot of people.
Liam Neeson is going to kill you.
Yes.
That is the genre. Mm-hmm. That is the name of this genre. Liam Neeson is going to kill you. On this,
it should be its own shelf at the video store if they still had video stores.
In this Liam Neeson is going to kill you film, there is an airplane that he's on. He's going to kill the airplane.
Yes. Nonstop.
He's going to nonstop kill that airplane.
Netflix noticed that you like movies where Liam Neeson is going to kill you. May we recommend?
There's a terrorist on board. That terrorist wants $150 million, and if he doesn't get it, he or she. Mm-hmm. He's going to kill somebody every 20 minutes. And then he begins making good on that threat.
Mm-hmm.
And makes Liam Neeson look like the bad guy.
Yes, there's so much going on.
And here. That is all we're going to tell you.
Yeah, that's all in the trailer. But yeah, basically it's a locked room mystery, only that locked room is an airplane at 20,000 feet over the Atlantic Ocean.
More like 35,000 feet.
Sure.
That's how high up airplanes
go.
Right,
sorry.
I know these things. I obsess about these things.
You do. I will defer to you on that one.
Yeah.
On a nonstop flight from New York to London. So it's a cool setup. I don't know that the third act landing of the when everything gets explained is not as satisfying as it might have been.
Well, it doesn't quite all add up.
Not really.
But it doesn't matter.
But you've had so much fun by that point that you're kind of willing to be forgiving. Like early on, Liam Neeson gets into a fight in an airplane bathroom.
And
not even the first class bathroom, the coach bathroom.
Yeah, don't tell anybody anything more.
Where there's like no room to do anything.
I know, but that's why it makes
no room for one person.
That's what makes it great, the way they're fighting in the bathroom. I love that scene.
I don't even know how Jacqueline Bisset managed to have sex in one of those in Rich and Famous. And here he's like, they're beating each other up. It's great. Right. And thankfully he is flying the friendly skies of Red Herring character actor airlines.
Yes.
Where every row has a face you know and an actor who is convincing him to make you think, is that the
real person? Like, so, who could it be? It could be Scoot McNairy.
It could be Julianne.
Who is the dude from Argo.
It could be Julianne Moore.
She has a mysterious scar.
On her chest.
It could be that dumb little kid.
Yes, who was in Mildred Pierce.
It could be...
Oscar nominee Lupita Nyong'o.
Mm-hmm. It could be Lady Mary.
Yes.
From Downton Abbey.
Michelle Dockery.
Her name is Lady Mary.
Well, yeah, yes, fine. Not to be confused with Lady Sybil, who's in Winter's Tale. Right. It could be Corey Stoll.
He was Ernest Hemingway in... Paris in Midnight?
Midnight in Paris.
In The Good of Evil?
he was also the...
Which movie?
Midnight in Paris.
Midnight in Paris.
He was also the sexy drunk in the first season of House of Cards.
Yeah.
It could be one of the pilots who are British guys whose name I don't remember.
Linus Roach?
Oh, yeah, Linus Roach.
Priest fame.
Right?
Yeah. So it could be anybody.
Yeah.
And they all... give the camera these very sort of suspicious sidelong glances so that you're always thinking, hey, what's he up to? what's she doing with it, my drink? You know, like, where's Lady Mary in all of this?
I didn't get my water.
I haven't really, it's weird to look at Lady Mary as a now person and as a servant. like, get me a drink, Lady Mary. And she'd be like, I think not. Like, that's what I expect from her. How dare you speak to me that way? Who do you think you are?
You ruffian.
I'm a Grantham, you know, like this, or crawl. I'm a Crawley. It's a weird, you know. It is strange to see her in 2014 clothes.
She's an actress.
I don't care. I know her from one thing.
Well, that's great.
She must always be that thing from now on.
That's what every actor dreams of.
I had the same problem with Helena Bonham Carter when she stopped being in Merchant Ivory-ish movies. Uh-huh. Because in my mind, she was, you know, she was like a queen in one of those films. And she's like, she's in A Room with a View and these other, like, Wings of the Dove kind of stuff. I don't even know if she was in Wings of the Dove.
She was.
But, you know, that's what she did.
She should be swathed in linens.
And then I see her in Fight Club all sexed up and mad, bad makeup and singing the Valley of the Dolls song. And I was, and I thought, Helena Bonham Carter's being weird, and it's now times, and I don't understand. Yeah, it was a rough transition for me.
I had a good bridge there, where there was a film that she made, I think, in the early 90s.
Like Lord Grantham and the Monuments Men, I could deal with that.
Right.
Because it was still vintage-y time.
Sure.
Yeah.
Helena Bonham Carter was in this movie in the early 90s called Portrait Chinoise, where she gets to talk all in French.
Yeah.
All Christian Scott Thomas style.
Yeah, yes.
So that sort of got me used to the idea of contempo casual HBC.
Contempo casual.
But it can be jarring. I know. Just seeing the pictures, like the red carpet pictures of the Downton Abbey actresses, like when you see Daisy or Mrs. Hughes and they've actually had their hair done, you're like, what?
Pretty ladies.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so go see Nonstop because it's terrific.
It's super fun. It is. You will have to be forgiving about the plot stuff not really being as satisfying as you want it to be,
sure.
But you'll have a blast if you go in with the right, you know, frame of mind. DVD pick?
I forgot this week. Sorry. What is yours?
Mine is, well, Ernest and Celestine reminded me, you know, that it's nice to get the non-CG movies every so often and that there's different ways to tell stories and different sort of visual looks you can go after. So I'm going to recommend Lilo and Stitch. I think that's a movie that doesn't get enough love. People don't talk about it enough when they talk about contemporary Disney movies. Like, it somehow, because it...
That's mine, too.
Because
I'm on board. I'm piling on.
Because it didn't, you know...
There. That solved that problem.
There we go. Because it's not a Pixar movie, and it's not a big musical, and it's... Right. You know, it just... people kind of... It falls by the wayside, and it's a lovely, lovely movie.
It really is.
Yeah.
It was... It's really one of the better... animated films of the past, you know, 10 years or so.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I don't know that people really give it that the attention that it deserves. Kids do.
Yeah, sure.
Little kids like it. But adults didn't come out in favor of it as often as much as I thought they might have should.
Well, you know, it's...
They might have should.
They might have should.
Might have should.
Yeah,
I should have said they might have should.
They might have should.
Then it would have been more...
It's always... Marketing that stuff is always tricky, but, you know...
Colloquially appropriate.
That movie was always sort of under the radar. Like, it was produced at Disney's, you know, TV animation facility in Florida, not, you know, in California with the big guys. Yeah, it was always sort of considered kind of second tier. But no, it's lovely.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful looking film.
And it has very, very
old fashioned animation.
Yeah, you know. The sort of watercolor look, the very sweet messages about, you know, family and whatnot, and interesting characters. I liked it.
It's very pro fat people, which I was completely on board with from the moment it began. Yeah.
And pro Elvis.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you haven't seen Lilo and Stitch, check it out. We got letters.
Dear Alonzo and Dave, one of you needs to learn to beatbox. That's the letter.
Okay.
It's from Thomas.
Well, why don't you read what the header is?
Hey, Thomas, you need to learn to beatbox. What do you think about that?
Read the header.
The tape player problem. Yes. Tape player conundrum.
The cassette conundrum.
The cassette conundrum, yeah. Yeah. How you like that? You learned to beatbox. And when you do, send us a cassette of it. Yeah. And we'll play it on our new cassette player.
There you go.
Yeah, no more conundrums.
And Dave might even know where the buttons are by that point.
Maybe. Dear Abby, and by that I mean Alonzo and Dave, in regard to your request for movie advice questions, I thought I would finally write in. This is from Fozzie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Here goes. I'm going to read it the way he wrote it. I am not racist. I'm going to read it the way he wrote it anyway. So my man say he been working late, but then Trina call me and tell me she seen his ass in the movie house with some hoe. But then when I ask him about his nonsense, he tell me he loves me. How do I make him tell me the truth to keep our love $1 million strong? Okay, so Fozzie, you're white.
And if we've learned anything from Perez Hilton this week,
it's the
strong black woman card is one we have to play sparingly, if ever.
I do appreciate the Trina reference because she's one of my favorite artists. Pull Over That Ass Is Too Fat is one of my favorite songs by Trina. But let's address his question.
Sure.
If your man is stepping out on you with another lover of ill repute,
mm-hmm.
What did you do to make that happen? How is this your fault? I think that's what you need to ask yourself. How is this your fault? It probably is somehow. Are you not... what are you not doing to keep the love $1 million strong?
If your lover is taking someone else to the movies, did you not want to go?
Did you not want to go see that movie? Did you say, I don't want to see Son of God. I prefer, The Last of the Unjust. I would like to sit through this 3.5-hour Holocaust documentary instead, rather than go see Son of God.
Because relationships are about compromise. It's about meeting in the middle.
Take one of your hoes.
The two of you could have gone to see Nonstop instead.
Right. So, you have found love on a two-way street. Don't lose it on a lonely highway.
Oh, no.
I think that's the answer to your question.
There you go. Thank you,
Casey. Make it better. And then your man will come back to you and take you to the film of your choice.
There you go. $1 million strong.
You'll be $1 million strong. Also, P.S. from Fozzie, Bibbs is delightful. And wonderful. So we have a pro-Bibbs vote.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we asked for.
I think there's a but in there.
But he does have a tendency to get excited when his voice gets high and he talks over his co-host.
Oh, yeah. On the new episode, you know how every year they do like an Oscar bet with each other and the loser has to do something bizarre? Like,
right.
Last year, apparently, in recent years, Bibbs had to eat 3 whole lemons.
That's easy.
Well, he's not a fan of lemons. Apparently, this year...
How is that? How can you not be a fan of lemons? They're delicious.
Ask Bibbs. Anyway, this year's thing is the loser is not allowed to interrupt the other one for an entire episode of their podcast.
When that episode airs, I want to listen to that one specifically. Hello again, Alonzo and Dave. Oh, more Bibbs hate.
Okay.
Yeah, this is pretty good.
We asked, you know.
He'll be very happy to
hear. He was clamoring for some.
I'm generally a fan of the B-Movies podcast. Wait a second. We're not talking about the B-Movies podcast here. We're talking about us.
Well, again, I'm sure there's a but in there.
But when they reviewed Star Trek Into Darkness and brought the film up again on their end of the summer episode, the degree to which they panned it and the fanboy passion behind their sentiments reached a level approaching self-parody.
Well.
I'm no Trekkie and even had a significant issues with Into Darkness, but we're a few months from a year since the film's release. And as far as I can tell, cinema is still intact. Maybe because it's because I care more about this franchise But Man of Steel was much worse for its source material than In the Darkness, though to give credit where credit is due, Whitney hated that one as well. Thank you for reading this long and possibly hypocritical letter, Robbie.
He gives the PS too.
Robbie wrote us a letter about the B Movies podcast.
We asked for Bibbs things, and Bibbs is the co-host of that show. So,
P.S. Yeah. P.S. from Robbie. Also, I'm listening to the most recent episode, and y'all not knowing what Google Hangouts are is the most adorable thing I've heard all week.
You know, I've done one, and I still don't know.
I defy anyone in the world to tell me what a Google Hangout is. There.
You go to Google, and
you hang out. All right. Here's a top 10 list. Dear Mr. Duraldi and Mr. White. Ooh. And that can only mean that it's from Julian from the Cinema Touch.
Ta-da!
He says, Linoleum Knife is still as golden as ever, and I am pro Jack Morrissey and pro Manola Darkest.
All right, $1 million strong.
I wanted to send you another list tonight, so I thought I would send a top 10 list of films that I consider to be underrated and undervalued due to lack of notoriety or an abundance of derision. I decided to select one from each decade from the 20s on.
Okay.
Sergei Eisenstein's The Strike.
Is it The Strike or Strike exclamation?
He has written The Strike. Okay. A film that I think is just as good as Battleship Potemkin with superb sequences in Eisenstein's best manner.
Okay, sure.
Frankenstein. James Whale's Frankenstein.
Okay.
Critics tend to consider The Bride of Frankenstein to be a superior film because of a higher level of production value. That is nonsense. The fact is that almost all of the horror genre can be traced back to this film. Mm. I'm down with that.
I think nonsense is putting too fine a point on it, but I'll concede your point.
Nonsense! This is from the 40s. Max Ophuls, The Reckless Moment. Mm. Believe it or not, this is actually my favorite Ophuls. I believe it!
I'm more letter from an unknown woman myself, but, you know.
Joan Bennett is out of this world. 2001's The Deep End was a remake with a homosexual slant.
Yes.
Monsieur Hulot's Holiday.
No.
Tati's Monsieur Hulot's Holiday. This used to be considered Tati's masterpiece until more people finally saw Playtime. Now the two have switched. Both are great.
Yeah.
The Knack and How to Get It from Richard Lester. He writes, anarchic. A brilliant excuse to portray a swinging London.
It's no Smashing Time, but, but what is?
Murder on the Orient Express from Sidney Lumet.
That of the entire 70s, that's your favorite film, really?
He says, Dave, it's my Poseidon Adventure.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Can't argue with that.
Lawrence Kasdan's The Accidental Tourist. He writes, every time I revisit this, I am flabbergasted by how the film masters its tone.
No.
I have not seen Accidental Tourist since the 80s.
Me neither, but I hated that movie in the 80s.
I remember liking it, but I don't remember... Really, why? I couldn't tell you why now.
I remember being bored out of my mind, and I loved the book.
Well, I never read the book, but I remember liking the movie. I would have to go back and watch that again with, you know, eyes that are 30 years older than when it came out, or almost 30 years older. The 90s, Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai, Jim Jarmusch.
Didn't see it.
There's a beautiful clash between two codes of honor. Ghost Dog is one of the best films of the 90s. Of the 2000s. Or it came out in 99, I guess. Yeah. Ghost Dog is one of the best films of the 90s.
Mm.
It's truly, truly great. I've seen it twice, which is not enough times, really. But it's amazing. So good. Forrest Whitaker is so great in it. From the Ooze. Atanar Zhuat, The Fast Runner, Zacharias Kunuk, which I have not seen.
Me neither.
He was a film like no other, yet very much like life. So,
ooh.
Yeah.
Mr. Firefly.
Listen, I agree. Look, he's got a good list here, so I'm going to give him this, and I'll put this on my to watch list.
Wait, did he do one for this decade?
Yeah. The Color Wheel.
Oh, that's a good one.
From Alex Ross Perry. He says, I consider this to be the defining film of my generation.
That might be going a little far, but it's a great movie. Okay, some of those I haven't seen. I'm not giving him accidental tours.
All right, but I am because I remember it fondly.
Fine.
What I remember of it, which is very little. You're 95% knife on this list, Julian Fad. I don't know how to pronounce your last name.
Fadul? It's Fadul.
From The Cinema Touch. So everybody go look at The Cinema Touch. Enjoy being touched by the cinema. Julian, thank you for this.
Do time. Not accidentally go to the Cheese Touch.
No. Okay, we're done. I got to get ready to go to the opera and eat my lunch and stuff.
That lunch has taken up so much of the day. By the way.
Taking up a lot of my concern space in my brain.
Programming note, if you have Sirius XM Radio, I will be appearing on the Frank DeCaro show on...
Tomorrow morning.
Monday morning, March 3rd, to talk about the Oscars. I'll be so glad when the Oscars are over and we can stop talking about the same 12 movies over and over and over again.
Hooray!
So tune in for that. It's going to be fun. And also, if you have Sirius XM, you should check out Gray and Matt on Rotten Tomatoes Radio and Derek and Romaine, where we tend to pop up once a month or so. Visit ChristyLemire.com and yep. Over in the podcast world, check out Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Team Jack, the Schmoes Know, the B-Movies Podcast with Gibbs and Whitney, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, The Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch. You can subscribe to the show for free on iTunes, and if you want to leave us a review there, that would be so great. You can stream us at Stitcher Radio or TheLounge.com, or on our Facebook page. We have an app that allows you to stream the show there. And while you're on our Facebook page, please give us a like. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. Check into the show at TVTag.com. Drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com with any questions, comments, top 10 lists, or whatever. You can now purchase our Clue commentary with the 1985 cult comedy mystery.
Yep.
You can still get our Apple commentary if you miss that. Heck, you can even get our White Christmas commentary if you want it, but you know, it's 'tis not the season. And once again, we want to thank our new sponsor, The Real Truth by Reed Martin, available from Faber and Faber.
Is that it?
That's it.
Goodbye.